Joshua wanted to rush into Kaligat and demand the return of Rumi's daughter and the release of all the other victims in the name of what was good and right. Joshua's solution to everything was to lead with righteous indignation. And there is a time and place unto that. But there is also a time for cunning and guile. Ecclesiastes 9 or something. I was able to talk him into an alternate plan by using flawless logic. Josh, did the Vegemites smite the Marmites by charging in and demanding justice at the end of a sword? I think not. These Brahmins cut off and eat the fingers of children. I know there's no finger-cutting commandment, Josh, but still, I'm guessing that these people think differently than we do. They call the Buddha a heretic, and he was one of their princes. How do you think they'll receive a scrawny brown kid claiming to be the son of a god who doesn't even live in their area? Good point. But we still have to save the child. Of course. How? Extreme sneakiness. Well, you'll have to be in charge then. First, we need to see this city and this temple where the sacrifices will be held. Joshua scratched his head. His hair had mostly grown back, but was still short. The Vegemites smote the Marmites? Yeah, Excretions 3:6. I don't remember that. I guess I need to brush up on my Torah. The statue of Kali, over her altar, was carved from black stone and stood as tall as 10 men. She wore a necklace of human skulls around her neck and a girdle made of severed human hands at her hips. Her open maw was lined with a saw blade of teeth over which a stream of fresh blood had been poured. Even her toenails curved into vicious blades which dug into the pile of twisted, graven corpses on which she stood. She had 4 arms. One holding a cruel, serpentine sword, another a severed head by the hair. The 3rd hand she held crooked, as if beckoning her victims to the place of dark destruction to which all are destined. And the 4th was posed downward, in a manner presenting the goddess's hand-girded hips, as if asking the eternal question, "Does this outfit make me look fat?" The raised altar lay in the middle of an open garden that was surrounded by trees. The altar was wide enough that 500 people could have stood in the shadow of the black goddess. Deep grooves had been cut in the stone to channel the blood of sacrifices into vessels so it could be poured through the goddess's jaws. Leading to the altar was a wide stone-paved boulevard, which was lined on either side by great elephants carved from wood and set on turntables so they could be rotated. The trunks and front feet of the elephants were stained rusty brown, and here and there the trunks exhibited deep gouges from blades that had hewn through a child into the mahogany. "Vitra isn't being kept here," Joshua said. "We were hiding behind a tree near the temple garden, dressed as natives, fake caste marks and all. Having lost when we drew lots, I was the one dressed as a woman. I think this is a Bodhi tree," I said. "Just like Buddha sat under. It's so exciting. I'm feeling sort of enlightened just standing here. Really, I can feel ripe Bodhi squishing between my toes." Joshua looked at my feet. "I don't think those are Bodhis. There was a cow here before us." I lifted my foot out of the mess. "Cows are overrated in this country. Under the Buddha's tree, too. Is nothing sacred?" "There's no temple to this temple," Joshua said. "We have to ask Rumi where the sacrifices are kept until the festival." "He won't know. He's untouchable. These guys are Brahmins, priests. They wouldn't tell him anything. That would be like a Sadducee telling a Samaritan what the Holy of Holies looked like." "Then we have to find them ourselves," Joshua said. "We know where they're going to be at midnight. We'll get them then." "I say we find these Brahmins and force them to stop the whole festival." "We'll just storm up to their temple and tell them to stop it?" "Yes." "And they will?" "Yes." "That's cute, Josh. Let's go find Rumi. I have a plan."